Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, May 18th, 2020. Producing from his home studio, his beautiful home studio, which he tweeted a picture of over the weekend. Taylor Schwenk, I'm Buster Olney, host of the Baseball Tonight podcast, and working from my home studio just north of New York City. Now, today, as we continue with Broadcaster Week from last week, we'll be talking with Dave Sims, the play-by-play man for the Seattle Mariners. We'll be asking him about his signature home run calls. That's a conversation we're also going to have with Sarah Langs about the best signature home run calls in baseball. First, some news and notes, some good news. Former Major League Baseball player and manager Art Howe was released from a hospital in Houston on Sunday after spending time in intensive care last week with the coronavirus. He told multiple media outlets in a text, "Relief, back in my own bedroom, it's just sweet. It was five long days or so. I'm finally feeling a little bit better, still not able to eat real good. Taste buds are giving me a hard time. It's just nice to be back home and hopefully continue to progress." Some of the proposed protocol to keep players safe was published over the weekend by Jeff Passan on ESPN.com. As he wrote, Major League Baseball's ambitious return-to-play plans during the coronavirus pandemic include processing upward of 10,000 COVID-19 tests per week, overhauling stadiums and in-game settings to encourage social distancing and rigorous rules intended to prevent the spread of COVID-19. The protocol is more than 60 pages long. From the Associated Press, Major League Baseball told players their prorated salaries would contribute to an average loss of $640,000 for each game over an 82-game season in empty ballparks, according to a presentation from the commissioner's office to the union that was obtained by the Associated Press, painting a picture of a $10 billion industry shuttered by the contagion. The 12-page document entitled Economics of Playing Without Fans in Attendance and dated May 12th was an initial step in negotiations aimed at starting the delayed season around the 4th of July. I wrote a column over the weekend, it was published on Sunday on ESPN.com, that I feel like the union should think big picture right now. It has leverage right in this moment, and they should wrap any agreement for 2020 into a new labor deal. Of course, the current deal expires in December of 2021, and that new labor deal would address player concerns about free agency, service time manipulation, and tanking. Now, we'll be talking about that later in the week. Today, as I say, a lot of talk about broadcaster home run calls. And before we get to Dave Sims and to Sarah, today on ESPN Daily, Michael Jordan's relentless drive and work ethic are constant themes in The Last Dance. Wright Thompson looks for the roots of that greatness in Jordan's family history and his upbringing. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast.
Numbers Game.
Sarah Langs, a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. First off, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, we had some nice weather this weekend. You know, that's something, you know, we take what we can get these days, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful up here in the Northeast. It's supposed to be for the next few days. So over the weekend, Jeff Passan reported the exhaustive protocol, 67 pages that came from Major League Baseball, sent to the Players Association. And I'm sure that for some players reading that, it'll be somewhat daunting. But my first thought when I read it was, you know what, to this point, a lot of the people who are involved in generating this are the doctors and the lawyers, and everyone's going to feel like they need to check every box and do their job. What do you think?
Yeah, I just think there are so many considerations. And I think we see that from what we've heard and seen about different states trying to open up and everything else. And obviously for a world like Major League Baseball or a, you know, micro environment, whatever it is, they do have to consider everything. And I definitely think that's why you get, you know, lists that are exhaustive like that.
All right. Coming up, we're going to be talking with Dave Sims, the play-by-play man for the Seattle Mariners. And I'm going to be asking him about his signature home run calls. In other words, the home run calls that he'll use repeatedly, not like the one that Joe Buck or Jack Buck had when he called Kirk Gibson's home run in the 1988 World Series, where he says, "I cannot believe what I just saw." These are the calls that broadcasters make on a regular basis on home runs. And I sent you an email on Sunday evening about this, and it got me going. And I was thinking about, you know, the different home run calls that we hear, and there's so many great ones. I almost feel like John Sterling needs to have a category all to himself for those individualized home run calls that he made. Here's Dave Niehaus, the late Mariners broadcaster, with how he called grand slams. Give a listen.
And now the right-hander set. Here's the 2-0 pitch to Edgar. Swung on and hit deep to right field. Back goes Ballinger to the track. The wall, get out the right bat. And Mustard Gravel. It is grand salami time. I don't believe it. Edgar Martinez has hit his third grand slam home run this year. And the Mariners have taken the lead over the Yankees. The Mariners lead it 5-3. My, oh my!
Here's Hawk Harrelson's home run call.
That ball hit high and deep in the left center field. Stretch. Side move back. He jumps. You can put it on the board. Yeah.
Here's our friend Dwayne Kuiper, and I love the power in his home run call.
He hits it high. He hits it deep. It is out of here.
And, Sarah, I know you'll like Gary Cohen's home run call on the Mets broadcast. You know, what are some of those home run calls that jump to mind for you?
Yeah, so the first one I thought of was Dwayne Kuiper's, and maybe it's because I was catching up on the podcast this weekend, so I was just hearing his voice as he was talking to you and Todd, but that's the one that like sticks out to me the most for whatever reason. Maybe it's almost that I've heard Gary Cohen so many times that I'm so used to it, but that he hits it high, he hits it deep, it is out of here, and what you're saying about that power, I mean, I think of that all the time. Some other ones, other than those ones we just listened to, another one that came to mind to me pretty quickly was, and I never got to hear it live, I will say that, but I know it and I've looked it up and I've listened to it so many times, is Jack Brickhouse for the Cubs, because you've got the hey, hey on the foul poles there. And that's how I learned about it, was the first time I went to Wrigley Field and I saw that and I was like, well, I need to look up why it says that on the foul poles. So I love that one.
Oh, absolutely. When I was a kid, the Monday night baseball games were called by the Pirates announcer, Bob Prince. So I'm 11, 12 years old and I'm pitching wiffle ball to myself because we lived in the middle of nowhere in Vermont and there were no other kids around. So I pitched to myself wiffle ball and I try to hit this, hit wiffle balls over a chicken wire. When I could, I of course would give the home run calls that Bob Prince did. I'm not even going to try to replicate it, but along the lines of, you can kiss that one goodbye. And, oh, my God, my older sister, she actually caught me on an audio tape doing that. And I paid so much money for her not to release it to the rest of my family. My older sister is evil with that, you know, having that home run call in her back pocket. I've been trying to figure out whether or not we should rank these, Sarah. Maybe I can double back with you and ask you for your top five next Monday or something like that. But on the other hand, it's almost like trying to compare Michael Jordan to LeBron. Like it almost diminishes both of them to have that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, just going through them, you know, last night and this morning, trying to figure out some other ones to talk about. They're all so great, you know, and fans are always saying, oh, I don't like this one, I don't like that one. And that's usually coming from, oh, that's my team's rival, I don't want to hear that one, or I don't want to see that highlight. But I just feel like there are so many. And that's local broadcasts. And another one that came to mind for me was our friend Matty V, Matt Viscursion, with the Santa Maria, you know, which he does on Sunday Night Baseball. And there's one specific home run. I'm sure you remember it from last year. It was, you guys were in Colorado in early April. And Cody Bellinger hit this monster shot, and we were just starting to see what kind of season Cody Bellinger was going to have. He hit this big home run to right field, and I think Jess started laughing as Matty V was saying it, and like, that's my signature Santa Maria from him. So I was thinking of that one too.
You know what? I'm going to have to get him on the podcast with you next Monday, and I'll make him pick the top five, like his favorite.
Yes.
his favorite top five. You're right about fans and how some of them turned them off. Like Hawk Harrelson, I love his home run call. I've always loved that. you know, you can put it on the board. And you'll hear players when we're in clubhouses in the early afternoon and there's a White Sox game on or has been on, and he makes that call, the players will give the Hawk Harrelson call. You know, I think they appreciate that. But, you know, thank you for your inspiration. Matt Viscursion, he'll be on the clock next Monday if I can wrangle him into joining us.
I love it. I love it. This is so much fun. You know, it's just like a whole other side of the game. I feel like we could do an hour-long podcast on this. We won't do that to people, but there are just so many. And it's just so much fun to listen to them. You know, I love the audio part of the game.
No doubt about it. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me, Buster.
Dave Sins is the play-by-play man on Seattle Mariners games for Root Sports Northwest. Dave has a lot of stories, and I can't wait to hear them. Thanks for helping to distract us.
Thank you. I tell you what, the feeling's mutual. Let me tell you, Buster, I'm telling you, man, the void is unbelievable. What can I tell you? And we have to entertain ourselves. It's gotten to that point.
So when I asked you ahead of time, send me a list of different things that you want to talk to, and your number one on your list was what? Number one on my list, which is the no-hitters that you called. And before we get into that, as a broadcaster, I'm curious about your philosophy because I get so much pushback when I'm watching a game and a pitcher has a no-hitter in progress, and I'll tweet out, hey, you know, Felix is in the seventh inning. He's got a no-hitter. So many fans get upset about that. How sort of did your philosophy on that develop?
My philosophy as an old newspaper guy and listening to the greats and studying the greats and then having Marty Brenneman, who we did the Final Four a couple, 3 years, and I was and talking to him, this 20-something years ago. He said, David, call what you see. And I had never really was a big, you know, I never really paid that much attention to that jinx. I mean, that's what they have down in the clubhouse. I got into an argument with the great Ozzie Smith about that. I said, Ozzie, I'm broadcasting, call Lottie, Dottie, and everybody to the potty because Felix has a no-no in the sixth. Tim McCarver came up to me one time in Chicago. He goes, hey, I hear you talk about no-hitters and perfectos while they're going on. I said, yeah, what about it? I'm getting my back up, getting ready to thinking we're going to have this big argument. He put his arm around me. He says, God love you, pal. I love it. Thank you. I'm glad you do that. And he told me a story about coming home after a game, turned on a TV, guy's throwing a no-no. The announcer never says it. And then they get to the ninth inning, and Tim at this point has been putting around his house. Said, if I'd known it was a no-no, I'd have sat down and watched the entire game and not just had it on sort of as ambient noise. And I caught a lot of grief in Seattle for that. 2012, I got the Umber Perfecto, did a BNET game on Fox. We got the Felix Perfecto in August of that year, August 15, 2012, and I think it was June 6th, a six-pitcher no-no, Mariners no-no the Dodgers. My deal is, if you're watching a game I'm doing, I'm letting you know what's happening. And if it's a perfect game, a no-hitter, so be it.
You talked about some of the pushback that you got. Of course, you have fans who are passionate, and I see them all the time on social media hammer me when I'll tweet out someone's got a no-hitter. Did you ever get pushback from a player or somebody on the team?
No, not at all. The only pushback I got was from Ozzie Smith at a charity golf event one time, and I asked him about that. And he got the you-know-what, the red you-know-what. What do you mean you talk to him? I said, yeah, Oz, come on, man. I'm not in a dugout. It has nothing to do with you guys. I got an audience I'm trying to entertain and inform and trying to grow that audience at the same time. And if that's a superstition you have, God bless, but it has nothing to do with me. I said, listen, it's not like when I was in fourth grade in Sister Frances Patricia's class and I'm trying to keep somebody from cheating off me. I'm trying to let everybody know what the hell's going on.
What's it like being in that seat calling a perfect game?
I tell you what. The surge of energy and like, oh my God, let's not screw this up. Let's get our facts. How many no-nos have there been? When was the last one? How many have been in both leagues? Call the game. I remember in Eric Karras, I did the game with him on that Fox game, and he was great. And the Felix game was different because it was our guy in our ballpark on a getaway day Wednesday. It was a spectacular afternoon, 21,000, I think, 08-09. Oh, was it 21,0899 on hand? And because it was Felix, because at that point he had had so many brilliant outings in the course of his career and had gotten legendary non-run support. It was unbelievable. And the game he wins is 1-0. He wins that game 1-0 against Tampa Bay. So it was just super exciting. And again, you know, the Mariners, we haven't been in the playoffs since 2001. So anything like that is just going to take on just a, you know, mega intensity. And my adrenaline, matter of fact, after the game, I went out after all the post-game stuff, did a bunch of interviews, and I went to dinner with my wife and some friends. And Mike Claiborne, who does Cardinal baseball, does it pre and post on radio. And he said, "How you doing?" I said, "I'm trying to come down from this." He says, "Don't you ever come down from calling a perfect game."
I've got a theory. I want to see if you agree with me or tell me if you think I'm full of crap. I feel like that the conditions for no-hitters are absolutely acute in Seattle, like no other ballpark in America. First off, you know, historically, you know, they've changed the fences, but generally speaking, it's been known as a pitcher's park.
Right.
It's the park that's the furthest from every other park in baseball. Players Correct. Have to travel. And you've got typically, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of times the afternoon games, you get the 12:35 start. And, you know, just knowing players rolling in there, Seattle's a great town to go out in. And those are the conditions for which you might get no hitters in an afternoon game.
Yeah, absolutely. And both of them, the Umber game was a Saturday afternoon, 1:10 start Pacific. And it was a 1:10 start and a Felix game on a Wednesday afternoon. I think all those factors, I think, are in play. I mean, you know, we haven't been in the playoffs since 2001, but I tell you what, I haven't met anybody in Major League Baseball or at the NBA from my NBA days that thought absolutely adore coming to Seattle, and particularly spring and summer where the humidity is almost non-factor and it's bright sunshine. And, you know, the days, it doesn't get dark till like 9:50, you know, at the peak of summer. So it's a wonderful place, a great eating, you know, if you're a foodie, it's a great place to be. You got the water, you got the mountains, you got everything.
All right. What was it like when Junior came back in 2009? You got to meet him.
Yeah, you know, obviously I knew of Junior being a baseball fan and covering baseball. I did baseball for ESPN in 93, 94, and I think in 03, 04. So I didn't really know him. And I just remember the first time I'd met him once when he was with the White Sox a couple of years before that. And then so now he comes to us, and I went in and introduced myself to him. And I tell you what, the guy, I thought I could talk. We talked about so many things. He talked about his family. I knew his family after, like, we had a conversation at his locker. I think it was after a workout for like an hour and change. It was amazing. And just a wonderful open for me that a Junior I know. I mean, he's a people person. He loves to talk and he loves his family, another time I went to his home, he and my son were doing some business, and he said, "Hey, bring your old man down. We'll play some golf." And I mean, he's got every, you know, his home is magnificent. And he walked us around. He's got closets bigger than my first couple of apartments here in New York. So, I mean, he's become a friend. And you know, when I went to my prostate cancer thing, he called his old man over to me and, "You're going to be all right." He walked me through the process and everything. So, now the Griffey's are big in my book. They really are.
So I tell people all this time, you know, as you do too, I'm sure, you know, "What's this person like? What's this person like?" And they ask me about Ken Griffey Jr. And my answer always is, you know what? My personal experience wasn't great, where you walk in as a visiting reporter that he doesn't know.
Right.
He was actually with the Reds when this happened. And I remember him sort of like harumphing at me a little bit. And then as I'm waiting, because he's, you know, basically I was standing over waiting for him to talk, I'm watching him interact with the clubhouse kids, and they love him, and the athletic trainer, and they love him. And so the way that I came away, and you know him better than I do, the way I came away was, you know what? He's lived in this fishbowl of attention. So knuckleheads like me, you know, he doesn't need folks like me. So I could understand why he'd kind of keep me at arm's length. But I tell friends all the time, I guarantee you that if you're his next door neighbor, you would love him, because you could see how his relationship was with people in the clubhouse.
Yeah, he's the best I've ever seen. And I've been lucky to cover, you know, a lot of sports. and he takes care of those guys, and he does a lot of stuff. He doesn't want to be, doesn't want to show off. He told me chapter and verse about, yeah, I was born with a lot of talent, but I worked my butt off, and I was up, you know, in my batting cage at 1 o'clock in the morning, and nobody saw me. And he would hear grumbles about, yeah, Junior doesn't take a lot of batting practice, you know, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. He'd already done it at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock a.m. Come on. And then there were many times I'm told before, you know, in his first run through Seattle that he was big with, you know, the children, you know, was it Make-A-Wish and all those kinds of groups, and befriending kids and making, you know, just making them feel at ease and welcoming them into the clubhouse and giving them everything and eating with them. Now, he's fabulous in that regard. There's no question.
All right. What was it like to watch Felix Hernandez do his work?
Yeah, artiste. I mean, I grew up in the 60s, so, you know, I'm a Koufax, Marichal, Gibson guy. This guy did a little bit different. The changeup, the breaking ball was just ridiculous. And then when I got there in 07, I mean, he could hump it up there. He was consistently 95-plus. And again, you know, I don't have his win totals in front of me, but I can guarantee he should have at least 80 more wins on his win total. Because there have been so – he went 1 year where I think he broke a Seaver record or something. Most games, seven innings plus, one run, three hits. And most of those games were no decisions. No decisions or heartbreaking losses. He leaves the game with a lead and somebody gives up a two-run bomb to win it eighth or ninth inning. I mean, so much heartbreak. And, you know, he's easy to root for. You know, and during all that time when he had non-support, I got to pitch better. I said, dude, he gave up two hits and struck out nine, walked one. What are you talking about? But he said, I just got to do a better job. And he's firmly believed that the best thing for him is to pitch at his optimum and be a great teammate. And I don't think, in terms of being a teammate, I never heard a bad word about Felix during my time with him. So that would have been, what, 07 through this past year.
Yeah, you know what was really cool was that after he signed that big contract, he lived in Seattle during the offseason. I remember hearing that from folks on the team and the organization, how unusual that was. And again, it reminded me that what I was saying about Junior and the reaction of the clubhouse guys. I'll never forget when Felix signed that long-term deal, when he was getting off an elevator at the ballpark, and there all the employees were waiting for him, and they gave him a big cheer, and he began to cry.
Yeah, he did. And I remember, you know, I live here in New York. So I saw that when they posted it online, and I thought it was one of the neatest things I've ever seen in sport. And, you know, they put out online in all the Safeco Field, now T-Mobile Park, hey, everybody down to the basement. So when Felix comes out for the news conference, and, you know, everybody in the building was there, had him, a couple, 300 people, and he shed tears, man. It was emotional, and it was really, it just showed you how much he meant to Seattle. The other thing, of course, when they started the King's Court and when he was dealing, man, and they'd have those blue and gold placards, and people would come in and they charge a reasonable fee. You go and sit in the left field corner near the foul pole and wear these gold t-shirts. I'll never forget that before they formalized it, there would be a group of people down there, and Felix would be, you know, he'd be in the sixth or seventh inning, and he'd have five or six strikeouts. And I hear this chant. I'm going, they're saying KKK. And I said, wait a minute, I just said KKK on a basically broadcast. What am I doing? K for the strikeout, people.
Right.
Like anything misconstrued here. You know what I'm talking about.
Who was your big influence as a broadcaster?
I got a lot. Bill Campbell, for one, who did the Philly Sixers and Eagles in Philly when I was growing up in the 50s and 60s. And then the first black man I ever saw do sports anchoring and then play-by-play was Bill White. Bill White, of course, was a great first baseman, Giants, Cardinals, Phillies, became the National League president, longtime announcer, and prior to that, longtime announcer with the Yankees. And I remember when he was National League president, I remember we got put together and we were going to have a meeting. He was going to try to get my name out into the biz to try to get me a job. This was well before I got the job at the Mariners. But I talked to him a couple, three times a year, and I said, Bill, you probably have no idea this is going on, but I pay tribute to you several times a week. And say, like Nelly Cruz, when Cruz was with us, deep to left, that ball's gone. And my deep to left is the call he put on the Bucky Dent home run in the playoff game at 78. Yastrzemski's not going to get it. It's a home run for Bucky Dent.
Deep to left. Yastrzemski will not get it. It's a home run. A three-run home run for Bucky Dent. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2. Bucky Dent has just hit his fifth home run of the year into the screen. And look at that Yankee bench, led by Bob Lemon. Big Cliff Johnson out there. And a happy Bucky Dent. Yankees now lead 3-2.
And I just like the way Bill was always a classy guy. And he, having played the game, he was able to disseminate information. And he had a blast with Phil Rizzuto. And I thought their camaraderie was outstanding. And it was a great listen.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and they needed someone like Bill, right? With his steadiness of his personality because of how his Scooter was.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and Phil, what did you do the last couple of lines? Well, I went down and I was talking to some huckleberries down. I was talking to Regis Philbin. And then you hear Phil go, hey, wait, what did he do last time up? Because all I have is a WW in my scorebook. Wasn't watching. I mean, you can't beat that guy. And Phil, you know, this first sound of thunder, Phil would already be on the GW Bridge heading home to Jersey.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that famously. When you told him that you borrowed that line from him on home runs every week, what was his response?
Well, he said, really? I said, yeah, no, it impacted me. I was pulling for the Yankees that day when Dent hit that home run. And it just, I hear, you know, here, living here in New York, you're going to hear that. You hear that clip a million times. So it's simple, to the point, and it said the whole story. And that's exactly, you know, that's what happened. And having worked at the Daily News here in New York at Tabloid, you know, the stories don't have to be long to be good. So, you know, get to the point, cut to the chase, you know?
I always love hearing the backstories of how play-by-play guys come up with their home run calls. I got a couple to ask you about. Boomstick Baby, Nelson Cruz.
A derivation of Bob Slick Leonard with the Indiana Pacers when Reggie Miller would hit a three-point shot. Mark Boyle, the play-by-play guy with Reggie in the corner, and then you just hear, boom, baby. So Nelly's, his handle was Boomstick. So I put two and two together. I asked my sons, what do you think? They said, go for it. I asked Nelly, I said, go for it. And I'll never forget coming into the clubhouse one day, and he said, come in. He whips out his phone, and it was about six home runs somebody had mashed up for him. And all I hear was, Boomstick Baby! Boomstick Baby! Nelson Cruz! So I really miss him as a person, and I miss having him on the ball club because I get to call a lot of monstrous home runs.
Oh, and he has a reputation being the best teammate, you know, super positive.
Oh, my God. Buster, I'm telling you, I've been around hundreds of guys in all the sports I've covered. He's probably a top threer.
Giddy up, giddy up, gone.
Watched a lot of Westerns as a kid. You name a Western that was on in the 50s and 60s. My favorite, the Lone Ranger. And what did Cowboys always say? You know, giddy up, giddy up. So, you know, and then also influenced a little bit by Uke, because Uke always says, yeah, go on, get up, get up, get out of here. So it sort of it fit my personality.
So I wanted to tell you this story about Kyle Seager, your third baseman. And this was one of the craziest things that I've ever had happen to me on a baseball field. It was actually before a game that was played by the Cardinals and Dodgers. Corey Seager was in the lineup for the Dodgers that day. And you know, you've got that group of fans behind home plate who are watching batting practices. I'm standing there. Guy calls me over. Hey, Buster, come over here. Hey, you know you're related to the Seager brothers. And I'm like looking at him going, what are you talking about? Like, and he goes, no, yeah, you guys have like the same great grandparent or something like that. And then he starts to relate all this information. Yeah, upstate New York, you know, this person and this person. I thought, that's crazy. Now, you know, Corey's personality, he's not a talker. Kyle is more of a talker than Corey. So then coincidentally, the next weekend we had the Mariners in Wrigley Field. And I walked up to him and I was like, hey, did you ever hear anything in your family that we're related? He goes, yeah, my dad used to tell me that when I was 12, 13 years old. I was watching you on television. So
no
I,
way.
Yep. So I apparently, I guess, now I haven't actually gone back and sat down with Kyle and found the where the family tree splits, but that's a fun conversation for a short guy from Vermont to tell.
Yeah, he is what's his name? Jeff, and I want to say Jeff and Judy, I think. They live in North Carolina, but yeah, he's from upstate New York, the old man. And I believe Kyle grew up in or near Kannapolis, North Carolina, where the King Richard Petty is from. So, whoa. I want to make sure I get that right. Is that Earnhardt? It's Earnhardt. It's one, I think it's Earnhardt from Kannapolis. But anyway, that's where he lives. And I have a good time with Kyle because he's a Carolina guy, and I do coach Mike Krzyzewski's radio show. So we're always busting horns on when Duke plays Carolina in college hoops.
All right. So I want to ask you last, there's this great story from a couple of years ago that happened with the Mariners. Actually, it's not a great story. It was involved a fight, but it was the craziest thing I ever heard. And I wanted to get your backstory on it involving D. Gordon. And I think Gene Segura was also involved.
Oh,
I
remember
reading
goodness.
The stories. Yeah. If you could tell that story, because when I read it, I'm like, well, that classic D. Gordon right there.
Well, as I remember, let's see, D was playing center field, short pop-up, probably more short to medium center field. D was playing kind of deep. Gene had a better angle on it. Generally, that's a short stop ball. And I think what happened was Gene took a couple of steps and shut it down and made D get a late start, come in, got his glove on it, dropped it. That had probably been maybe three, four, five times that happened because that year we had to play D in center field. And evidently they had some words. I'll never forget. We're down there for to see the skip, and you know, milling around the clubhouse. Hey, what's going on? How you doing? Blah blah blah. And D comes up. Excuse me, sir. Can we have the clubhouse for a moment? I say, yeah, stay. Wait, can we? Yeah, what do we need? So I walk out, and a bunch of us we walk out the door, and the door closes, and then I told you not to do that. Boom! And then the door opened up, and it looked like Mel Brooks's Blazing Saddles. It was a bunch of guys on top of each other trying to pull one guy off another. And D was going after Segura, and it ended right there. But it was so explosive and so fast that and it was something that you don't see every day that close and that personal.
And I was going to say, when I saw D the next time, I was like, that is classic D Gordon right there, where he politely asked people to leave the clubhouse so he can brawl.
Yeah. I mean, I'm telling you, it was just so good. And my wife always said, have him call you Dave. And he won't call me by my first name. He always got sir. I said, sir, can we have the clubhouse for a second? And boom, 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 like an MMA fight just broke out. It was amazing.
And I got to have you because you said this on the list, and I love to hear backstories from folks about who their team was, who their favorite player was. And then your list was the heartbreak of the Phillies 1964 collapse. What do you remember about that?
Bunning and Short and Bunning. I remember interviewing Art Mahaffey when I was on New York radio and about 91, and I asked Art the question, and Art was still PO'd. I said, I can sort of understand your pain. I said, I was like, what hell was that? I was 10 or 11. I'd had my money saved up for a World Series and kind of play the Yankees. I was all excited. And Chico Ruiz got it started stealing home with Frank Robinson, of all people, at the plate. And flash forward years later in Baltimore, and I see Hank Allen, who's a scout, and he had played ball. He had some great stories about playing for Ted Williams. And I said, hey, man, I said, your brother's one of my favorite players. I wore number 15 as a high school senior. And, man, I was as a catcher. I said, I had my money saved up for World Series tickets. He said, money saved up. And he says, hold on for a second. Stands up, pulls out his wallet. Here's the tickets from 1964. How about that, huh?
Wow. He had the tickets
that
he just hung on to. He's hanging on to that heartbreak.
Yep, yep. And anybody from the greater Philadelphia area of that generation, a sports fan, can remember it like it was yesterday because the Phillies, the Whiz Kids had the great run in 50. They let them get old together. Team went in the toilet. Dick Allen comes up. Cookie Rojas, Johnny Callison, Bunning Short. They had a hell of a team. And they blew it, and they would have played the Yankees. And I grew up a 15-minute walk from County Mex Stadium.
Wow. Yeah, you had your heart ripped out by that team. When I was 13 years old, I was a huge Dodgers fan, and Reggie Jackson, you know, hits three homers to beat them, the Dodgers, in game six. And I was weeping as a teenager. And many years later, I'm covering the Yankees for the New York Times, and I am talking to Reggie Jackson for the first time in my life. And there's this little voice in the back of my head going, oh, my God, I used to hate you. Oh, my God.
You're right. Yeah, you know, and that probably, you know, any of us who've been, you know, lifelong, you know, sports fans, jocks, and as a kid, you hate so-and-so. And then, you know, you and I have been lucky enough to meet a lot of these guys.
Yeah.
And yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, that little birdie on your shoulder. You know, this sucker, I remember him. I wanna, you know, but then, now you famously get along with him in a professional relationship. It's really cool.
Oh, I love talking to Reggie. He's great. Absolutely. All right, Dave, thanks for the time on this. Thanks for distracting us. I loved your stories.
Hey, man, thank you, Buster. All the best. Look forward to seeing you at the Art, man. Take care.
Here's Tim Kirkchen's Daily Baseball Fix about the great Brooks Robinson.
Hi, this is Tim Kirkchen, and on this date in 1937, Brooks Robinson was born. I think he's the greatest defensive third baseman of all time. He won 16 Gold Gloves, most ever by a position player, and he was especially good in the 1970 World Series against the Reds. He made at least a half a dozen spectacular plays. Robinson also had 2,848 hits. He won the MVP in 1964, and he holds the record for most games, 10, in which he drove in the only run in a 1-0 victory. And Brooks Robinson is, to me, the nicest superstar player I have ever met. He is beloved in Baltimore. He is beloved everywhere. And in a retirement gala for him, Gordon Beard, a sports writer, said, "In New York, they named a candy bar after Reggie Jackson. Here in Baltimore, we name our children after Brooks Robinson."
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Monday. Andrew Campbell at Real Camp Drew writes in, "With the Last Dance documentary coming to an end, what comes to mind first when thinking of the most dominant dynasty or generational player of any era in baseball? Is it an old Yankees team, Cincinnati's Big Red Machine, or something like Babe Ruth or Hank Aaron?"
It was Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth, without a doubt, he lorded over the sport. You know, he completely altered the sport. There's that great stat from 1927 when he set the record with 60 home runs in a season, that he out-homered every other team. And the sport itself changed to adapt to what Babe Ruth was doing and hitting home runs. And it went away from the Ty Cobb style of, you know, running and bunting and slashing and scoring that way to going for the long ball. And Babe Ruth completely changed the sport in a way that I don't think anybody has in any sport, maybe save for Wayne Gretzky.
JJ May, my two, writes in, "Do you think Major League Baseball will ever retire Roberto Clemente's number league-wide, similar to what they did with Jackie Robinson?"
I hope so, because of the great player that he was and the legacy that he carries. And I thought, you know, Justin, when I saw your question, I thought, you know what, a good time to do that would be in 2022. Because in September 2022, that'll be the 50-year anniversary, the last game Roberto Clemente played. And, of course, the last hit he got was number 3,000 in his career off of John Matlack. That would be a really good time to do that. I believed for a number of years that they should retire it. Baseball has not done it. That would be a good time to do it.
Last one up for today, not really a question, more of an acknowledgement here. Austin J. Smith writes in, at Bear Boot Prod, "I listen to Baseball Tonight every day, but finally a little bummed after the Greenberg episode. The intrinsic American sport of bull riding has been in competition since mid-April." Austin filed several tweets asking for, you know, a little bit of recognition on bull riding, which I guess has been around for a while. So in a weekend where we had some live sports to watch, don't forget about bull riding, everyone, please.
And by the way, in the last 4 days on my family farm back in Vermont, cows were released into the pasture, and I grew up with cows. So I get it, Austin. I agree with you. I've known Mike Greenberg for a long time. I promise you, bull riding is not on his radar.
I don't think he was taking any shots at it either, to be fair.
No, not to be at fair all. To both of and them. I would tell you that Greeny would be the first one to tell you that bull riding was not on his radar. So I apologize on behalf of Greeny that we weren't thinking about it the other day.
That's it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Thanks, everyone.
That's it for today. My thanks to Dave, to Sarah, to Taylor. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great day and stay safe.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.